This is VOA News. I'm Faith Lapidus. The former British ambassador to the U.S. believed President Donald Trump's withdrawal from the Iranian nuclear deal was an act of diplomatic vandalism against his predecessor Barack Obama, according to newly leaked diplomatic cables. The Mail on Sunday published Kim Darroch's May 2018 message days after he resigned and a week after the newspaper published other leaked cables. In the earlier memos, the diplomat described the U.S. leader as inept and his administration as uniquely dysfunctional. In the cable, Darroch wrote that the Trump administration, in abrogating the Iran deal last year, is set upon an act of diplomatic vandalism, seemingly for ideological and personality reasons. It was Obama's deal. Darroch resigned Wednesday, saying his posting in Washington had become untenable with the disclosure of his cables. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents are set to launch nationwide raids Sunday aimed at arresting immigrants in the country who are facing deportation. The campaign is expected to focus on hundreds of families in nine major cities. In the days leading up to the raids, Democratic lawmakers and others have been informing immigrants of their rights and advising them not to open their doors for ICE unless the agents show a court-ordered warrant. Acting Immigration Services Director Ken Cuccinelli told ABC News ICE agents are simply enforcing the laws that Congress passed.
They're loyal, they're compassionate, but they have a job to do, and it's a tough one and made a lot tougher when a lot of people in Congress throw the vitriol at them that they are just for doing their job and enforcing the laws.
The raids are expected to be well received by supporters of Trump's repeated promises to crack down on migrants living illegally in the U.S. Opposition Democrats have called the operation inhumane. This is VOA News. The National Hurricane Center said Sunday that Tropical Storm Barry is gradually weakening as it moves across western Louisiana with maximum sustained winds of 65 kilometers per hour. Barry's primary threat is dangerous, life-threatening flooding from heavy rains, but the storm is expected to weaken to a tropical depression later Sunday. Even so, meteorologists said tornadoes are possible in the storm's path. Police in Hong Kong fought with protesters as they broke up a demonstration by thousands of people demanding the resignation of the semi-autonomous Chinese territory's chief executive and an investigation into complaints of police violence. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
Scuffles broke out at the end of a mainly peaceful protest in the northern Hong Kong district of Sha Tin when police started clearing streets after nightfall. Some protesters retreated into a shopping complex where they and police hit each other with clubs and umbrellas. Whilst it's unclear how many protesters were arrested, the violence wound down towards midnight as the remaining protesters left the area. The demonstration added to an outpouring of grievances this year against the former British colonies' leaders, who critics complain are eroding Hong Kong's freedoms and autonomy, and are more responsive to the Beijing government than to the territory's people. I'm Karen Chamas.
Around 1,000 people gathered in central Moscow Sunday to demand that opposition candidates be included on ballots for the September 8th Moscow City Duma elections. The protest was billed as a meeting between opposition leaders and their voters after signatures sponsoring several candidates were rejected by the Moscow Election Commission. The candidates had to submit 4,500 verifiable signatures of support. In a series of Sunday morning tweets, quickly deemed racist and xenophobic by critics, President Trump has provoked fresh controversy with taunts at several new members of Congress. He tweeted that the progressive Democratic congresswomen should go back and help fix the crime-infested countries from which they came. Of the four apparently targeted, only one, Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, a native of Somalia, is foreign-born. The other three are all born in America: Ayanna Pressley, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Rashida Tlaib. In the early hours of Monday, India is set to launch a mission to an uncharted area of the moon, marking a significant milestone in its steadily expanding ambitions in space. If successful, India would become the fourth country to land a probe on the moon after the United States, Russia, and China, and secure its place as a leading spacefaring nation. The Chandrayaan-2, which means moon vehicle in Sanskrit, will have a lunar orbiter, lander, and rover. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington.
That is only correct when the speaker is doing that legally. In this case, the speaker is doing that legally, is doing that with malice, with evil intention. And that is why we are going to join the commission in the case.
The Tanzanian Speaker of Parliament declares vacant a parliamentary seat for a government critic.
If the army is fed up with the negotiations and with the interference of one of the countries which you have mentioned, we might have a 100% military coup. And that is not good because it will not lead to stability in Sudan.
A Sudanese opposition party calls for fresh negotiations between opposition groups and civil society to form a civilian-led transitional government.
I want to meet on the open. These are the police of the Uganda government. The last one they came, they broke my house, broke the door going to my bedroom, and I hid in the bathroom. They broke that one.
And a retired Ugandan Supreme Court judge expresses concern about his personal safety. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A Tanzanian legislator from the main opposition party, Chadema, will legally challenge a decision by the Speaker of Parliament to declare his seat vacant this week. Tundu Lissu is a former president of the Tanganyika Law Society. He has been absent from the lawmaking body for months as he receives medical attention in Belgium. Declaring the seat vacant, the speaker said Lissu's long absence from parliament is the reason why parliament made that decision. For more about the court challenge, I read John Malia, one of the lawyers for the opposition lawmaker Tundu Lissu. He is also head of legal affairs for Chadema.
Yes, Lissu has instructed myself and senior counsel Aluti Mugwai to file a case in the High Court of Tanzania here against the speaker's decision to declare his constituents vacant because of the absence of Tundu Lissu. But the case won't be against the speaker only, it will also be against the electoral commission of the country. The board that supervises the election has already announced the election date, which according to themselves is of July. So we're planning a case very soon to challenge the decision by the speaker because the speaker's decision is based on an information and deceit on the side of the speaker that they don't know, the parliament doesn't know where this is. It is known by the public, it is known by the parliament, it is known by everybody in the world that we reach receiving treatment in Belgium. After surviving an execution attempt.
But this is what some supporters of the ruling party are saying, that Tundu Lissu has been absent from parliament for a very long time, and that if he is not physically capable of being in parliament or the bonga, then he should give way to somebody who is physically able to do so, so he prepares for next time when he's physically able to. How do you respond to that?
That is not what the laws provide. The Parliament of Tanzania is run by standing regulations. They have a law called the Parliamentary Privilege and Activities Act. All these acts, all these laws require that when a parliamentarian is sick, the Parliament should take care for him to recover so that he can come back to his seat. We understand that a lot of other parliamentarians who are also sick, they will be in the constituents, they will be in the Parliament for quite some time. But this is completely personal vendetta against Tundu Lissu because Tundu Lissu has been a threat to the government, the speaker himself, because of his very firm standing against impunity and dictatorship regime that Magufuli's government has been imposing in the country. So whatever the parliament or the speaker is doing is purely a personal vendetta against Tundu Lissu.
But some are arguing that the constitution also gives the Speaker of Parliament the power to declare a seat vacant based on certain criteria which they argue Tundu Lissu has yet to meet. So if he is not yet to meet their criteria, then it behooves the Speaker of Parliament to exercise his power under the Constitution to declare his seat vacant since he is unwell and incapable of representing his constituency.
That's a misinterpretation of the Constitution. The Constitution gives the Speaker powers to declare a seat vacant when a member of Parliament negligently or willingly disappear from the Parliament sittings and all of the meetings that the Parliament is sitting on. In this case, it's different. This man is not in the Parliament, not because he has willingly decided to do so. Guy is sick. He was shot 16 bullets on his, landed in his body. He has been operated for more than 20 times in his body. He's trying to recover where he can get back to the prayer, and they declared that he will be coming back in Tanzania for him to continue his parliamentary duties in September.
Some are arguing that the Tanzania Electoral Commission is just following procedure, that when the Speaker declares a seat vacant, he gives instructions to the Tanzania Electoral Commission, which is mandated by the Constitution to organize elections in the country. So why rope them in when they are just doing their work?
That is only correct when the Speaker is doing that legally. In this case, the Speaker is doing that legally. He's doing that with malice, with evil intention. And that is why we are going to join the Commission in the case.
What realistically are your chances of success at the High Court next week if you file a court to challenge the decision of the Speaker of the Bonga or the National Assembly?
I cannot, as a lawyer, I cannot predict, I cannot preempt the court. I'll leave it for the court to decide. But what I'm saying is that my client, Otunu Lissu, was a very strong case. The world knows, Tanzanians know, the Speaker himself knows that Otunu Lissu is sick. He's in hospital, he's being treated. Yes, he has been going here and there, the part of his treatment, but he's not enough to call to come back in Tanzania and operate as a parliamentarian until 7th of September, which he announced he'll come back to Tanzania for that purpose. So that is what we're going to advance in court, and then we'll leave study. Decide. Let's wait for the court to make a decision.
John Malia is one of the lawyers for the Tanzanian opposition lawmaker Tundu Lissu. He's also head of legal affairs for Chadema. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. The Sudanese Opposition Popular Congress Party, or PCP, has called on the Communist Party, other opposition groups, and civil society to join the group to come up with a newly improved transitional agreement to peacefully lead the country to the next general election. The PCP's remark came after local media reports say the Communist Party, a major player in the Forces for Freedom and Exchange, expressed concern about the lack of progress of the current negotiations between the TMC and the Forces for Freedom and Change. For more about the opposition party's new agreement call, I reached Dr. Bashir Adam Rahama, the Deputy General Secretary for the Opposition Popular Congress Party, or PCP.
The General Secretary of the Communist Party, or the head of the Politburo, to issue a statement saying that the Communist Party is not pleased with the negotiations between the FFC and the Transitional Military Council. This is something big. That means now the negotiations are not fruitful. My party is now stretching the hand for the Communist Party and all the other political parties, civil, that is, entities, that we can sit together and reach an agreement on how to administer the transitional period. And after that, we can take what we have agreed upon and go to the TMC and tell them this is the way we would like the transitional period to be administered until we reach the time of the elections, so that we can foster our democracy.
Now that the Communist Party's stance seems to inch towards yours, what is next? What can you do?
To tell you honestly, we have already reached hands to them, and we met with them, and we discussed it informally. And they agreed that they might sit with us, not only as the Popular Congress Party, but with the group which constitutes a lot of political parties, and also that is some guerrilla movements who have signed the peace treaties with the previous government, and then we can discuss something which is in favor of the stability and security of Sudan during the transitional period.
Does that mean that the agreement that you want to seek would supersede what has been agreed upon by the FFC and the Transitional Military Council as mediated by the African Union and the Ethiopian government?
What they have reached up till now is not signed on paper. So it is liable to be changed, altered, or superpassed altogether. So that is, in general, anything which will stop the escalations between the civilians and the military, we are for it. But unfortunately, the general understandings, which has not yet been signed or agreed upon between the two parties, we have some reservations. One is that they came through foreign interference.
You talked about foreign interference. Now you have Egypt, I understand, that is backing the TMC. The other regional powers are trying to come in. So where does this leave you? Because if the status quo remains with the dragging of the non-signing of the agreement and things remain as they are, the situation could deteriorate.
Yes, of course. Unfortunately, there are, I think, two scenarios. The good scenario: if things did not go well, the TMC might have a very quick elections in about 9 months or 1 year. But the bad scenario is that if the army is fed up with the negotiations and with the interference of one of the countries which you have mentioned, we might have 100% military coup. And that is not good, because it will not lead to stability in Sudan.
Dr. Bashir Adam Rahama is the Deputy General Secretary for the Opposition Popular Congress Party, PCP. He spoke with me from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. A retired Ugandan Supreme Court judge has called on the government to protect him after expressing concern about his personal safety. Local media reports say unknown gunmen have surrounded the house of Justice George Kanyehamba, harassing and intimidating people from going to visit him, effectively placing the retired judge under house arrest. To learn more about the situation, I reached retired Supreme Court Judge Justice George Kanyehamba in the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
For the last 5 or so days, I've been under house arrest. The point is that they withdrew all my resident guards, including my personal bodyguard, in a very, very dramatic way. Then the police, I don't know whether it was by deception or not, all those who are responsible for VIPP said that they wanted to come and see me. They praised me. They said wonderful things about me. We took a photograph together. They were led by a man called OSG Harman. And they said, your protection, because you are a retired judge and the work you did can put you in a lot of trouble, we are going to make sure that we guard you day and night.
If they have written an apology about your mistreatment, why have they placed you under house arrest? What did you do to incur their wrath?
Please. So that is a point I don't know. Let me tell the story, then you can ask me questions afterwards. Because that is a hallmark of why I'm frightened now. When my guardian returned, he said, there are four armed men outside with machine guns on your door or the gate. So I said, let me talk to them. Do they have marching orders? He said, no. I called them. They refused. They said, we are not supposed to talk to you. I am in a wheelchair, temporarily, I hope. So I went there to the gate, and they ran away from there. So I came back and called the Prime Minister, Rakana Rugunda, who, by the way, currently has got a power of attorney with the president's office to protect me themselves protect my property, which includes my residence. So when that happened, he said, I'm going to handle it. Even as I speak now, I was complaining that unless they are removed within half an hour, I am going to be driven to your residence and I think thankfully in your home. He received the message that he sent me a message 5 minutes ago. He said he's in our hometown, Kabale, and he's going to handle it. That one, I have recorded everything. So if the government denies it or anybody denies it, I will preserve it and I can send you the message.
Some are suggesting that you have endorsed Bobi Wine to become the next president of Uganda, which some supporters of the NRM say is an existential threat to the peace and stability of Uganda, since Bobi Wine has been charged with treason, among other charges.
I comment on all politicians who aspire to be our leaders. It's my human right. So I have been sent into safe houses at least 4 times. But Bobi Wine has been very kind to me. Even when he had been put under house arrest, he came here last night to sympathize with me. So doesn't a human being respect and want the person who is very kind and helping him to succeed against those who have put me in safe houses at least 3 times, arrested me on the open? These are the police of the Uganda government. The last one they came, they broke my house, broke the door going to my bedroom, and I hid in the bathroom. They broke that one. The Chief Justice said, I'm embarrassed because many of the ministries are corrupt. The Chief Justice said, I am embarrassed because many judges are corrupt. So I am proud to support publicly those Ugandans who wanted to govern democratically, rule of law, and respect human rights.
No.
So I'm not committing an offense.
Now, Prof, let me ask you this. You used to be a very close ally of President Yoweri Museveni. What happened? How did you part company, and why are you being his critic?
Museveni, even today, is my friend. I told you recently he saved me. I praise him. But if you are my friend and I find that you have a wound which bleeds, I tell you, clean it. And you don't clean it, and it is smelling terribly. Do I stay next to you?
Justice George Kanyehamba is a retired Ugandan Supreme Court judge. He spoke with me from Kampala. The Kenyan government is scheduled to host the Common Market for Eastern and Southern Africa, or COMESA, high-level business summit beginning Monday. Several regional heads of state have confirmed participation in the one-week business meeting to be held at the Kenyatta International Convention Center in the capital, Nairobi. Organizers say over 200 exhibitors from the East and Southern African countries have registered to be part of the event. For more, I reach Edward Olem, spokesperson for the Kenyan Ministry of Trade.
Each year for the last 3 years, we've been having what we call the Kenya Trade Week. And every year, funding keeps growing. This time now, we are collaborating with the COMESA Business Summit to come up with what we call the third Kenya Trade Week, partnering with COMESA SOS 21 International Trade Fair and High Level Business Summit. Our theme is empowering regional integration through trade. As the Ministry of Trade, we recognize the power of trade in bringing nations together. And this time around, we are partnering with the COMESA. We have received confirmation from a number of countries that they'll be coming. Others will be led by heads of state and others by ministers and other powerful delegation to KICC. So for Monday and Tuesday, primarily shall be dealing with internal issues. But from Wednesday to around Sunday, we shall be dealing with the entire regional affairs.
Edward, I understand 3 heads of state have so far confirmed participation, not forgetting the host president, President Uhuru Kenyatta. But what is the key agenda on this specific summit that you will be handling?
Well, the truth is that for some time now, Africa has been changing. Ideally, we trade little with each other as opposed to other areas of the world, and we'd like to trade more and more with each other. We begin by having such kind of aura. Maybe we address hindrances that inhibit trade between two or three countries. We begin fostering new links, market chains. We learn from each other and so on. We feel that by coming together under such kind of forum, then we get exposed to our colleagues somewhere in other countries and how we can trade with them.
What you just said dovetails into the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, or AFCFTA, that was recently signed. Does that mean that it will play a critical role in moving forward with intra-African trade on the continent?
Okay, so I'll give an example of Kenya. In East Africa, we've been doing very well under EAC. We are also doing well under COMESA also, and maybe the next step is either tripartite or CFTA. You must begin by working with your neighbor, trading with your neighbor before you move to the larger continental area. There could be challenges outside there, but as far as we know, EAC has succeeded well. COMESA has equally succeeded well. If you can succeed with your neighbors around here, then chances are that you can also do better when you come together as a continent of Africa.
What are some of the expectations during this meeting, and what do you think should be the takeaways following this summit?
I can say that we need to address what are the obstacles that hinder higher percentage of trade among African nations. We know Europe does maybe 60 and above between European nations. Asia could be doing somewhere between 30 and 40, but Africa at large, our intra-trade is still low. So the expectation is that as we sit together under panels, we discuss issues, we thrash them out. One of the things is that we'll come out knowing very well how to trade with our neighbors, as opposed to an earlier before. And then also understand that exhibitions are not new. Europe is doing it, Asia is doing it, some parts of Africa are doing it. Why not EAC region?
Some people have expressed concern that sometimes when there are hindrances trade-wise, sometimes it drags on for a long time. Cases in point in East Africa where there have been disputes here and there with tariffs and counter-tariffs and all that. Will this be readily addressed to ensure that there is a diplomatic effort, apart from the trade, to resolve things quickly?
For the last 2 years, if you follow trade in East Africa, you'll find that most of the non-tariff trade barriers have been solved. And one of the key objectives, or what you expect in this area, is that we are going to have sessions on economic diplomacy in the context of regional economic blocs like EAC, COMESA, CFTA, and so on. But you also want to find out ways of promoting consumption of local production and maybe discuss other things. Especially now that Kenya is a country, for example, last year we did launch the Export Promotion Development Strategy. So we want to see how far have we gone with the implementation of this Export Promotion and Development Strategy in relation to people who will be coming around. Africa must learn to trade with Africa, and we can only do so by beginning either within the EAC region, expanding to COMESA and other areas.
Edward Olem is the spokesperson for the Kenyan Ministry of Trade. He spoke with me from the capital, Nairobi.
It's the weekend, and that means another new and exciting episode of Music Time in Africa. Hi there, I'm Heather Maxwell. I've got two Africa Cup of Nations favorites from Madagascar and Nigeria, new reggae, Afropop, and oldie but funky hit from Sudan, and two live guest appearances, Rayvanny and Oran Etkin.
In my tribe, like, every name has to start with moi. So moi
Maxwell.
I was 19 years old. I went to Mali and spent a lot of time there. And
you'll also meet Jacob Mafuleni and Martha Tom. They're keeping music traditions alive. Find out how and enjoy live marimba and mbira music at the same time.
We play using our thumbs.
Listen to Music Time in Africa, 1505 and 20500 Universal Time.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. But first, analysts and business people in the six-member state Central African Economic and Monetary Community, or CEMAC, say, although the African Continental Free Trade Area launched in Niger last Sunday at an African Union summit brings hope to Pan-African trade, they are not sure CEMAC will be fully implemented anytime soon. CEMAC's similar free trade area has been plagued by corruption, national egos, and a limitation of movement that have stunted the initiative. For VOA Moki, Edwin Kenseka reports from the Cameroonian town of Kiosi on the border with Gabon and Equatorial Guinea.
Hundreds of travelers and business people are at the Cameroon town of Kiosi waiting for the Equatorial Guinea border to be opened for them to cross over with their goods. Kiosi shares the border with Gabon and Equatorial Guinea, and quite often, authorities in Gabon and Equatorial Guinea seal their borders without any comment. Last December, Equatorial Guinea sealed its borders for a month. That same month, Gabon was expelling foreign citizens, especially Cameroonians, from its territory for what they called security reasons. Gabonese-born Gabriel Ndongma, who buys building material from Cameroon and supplies for his country and Equatorial Guinea, says he does not understand why the borders have to be sealed and people chased away when Central African states have a common monetary and economic community created to facilitate movement and trade.
Il faut effacer ce mauvais esprit-là qui plane dans la sous-région pour le Cameroun.
He says leaders of the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, should be serious for once and take strong political decisions that will make it possible for their people to travel freely among Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, Chad, Central African Republic, Cameroon and Congo, which belong to their six member state economic bloc. CEMAC was created in 1994 and became operational after all member states ratified the treaty, creating it in 1999. It has a population of about 45 million and covers a surface area of 3 million square kilometers. CEMAC officially became a free trade zone in 2000 when it announced movement of goods, services, capital and persons was now free. In 2017, the Central African Economic and Monetary Community said it had reached a key milestone after heads of state meeting in Chad lifted visa requirements for their citizens traveling within the six-member regional bloc. Chadian-born transporter Bismau Halidu says besides the regular closure of borders by some states in the region, non-tariff barriers have made the free interstate trade difficult to take off.
Il est souvent arrivé que lorsqu'on parle de vol, lorsqu'on parle de falsification, lorsqu'on parle un peu de tout ce qui n'est pas dans le bon sens des mœurs.
He says there are high levels of corruption among police, tax and customs officials in all Central African states. He also notes that surprisingly, Cameroon, which should pilot the integration process because it has a population of more than 25 million, more than half the region's total, is viewed as a country not to be trusted because it is notoriously corrupt. Daniel Ona Ondo, president of the CEMAC Commission, says security challenges are making it difficult to ensure free movement that can deepen economic integration for its citizens. He says carnage has continued in CAR. Boko Haram terrorism has continued along Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, and the separatist crisis has killed thousands in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon.
Aucun investisseur ne viendra chez nous s'il y a le désordre. Nous avons besoin de paix. Mais bien sûr,
he says the region remains a place where pools of tensions and war make entrepreneurs scared to come and invest, sell or buy. He says it is still very difficult for people and goods to move freely because commuters are harassed by rebels and terrorists, and at times, security forces who are supposed to protect them. Chadian-born Fatima Haram Asil, CEMAC Commissioner for Trade and Industry, says Central Africa is one of the poorest regions in the world, with 70% of the population living on less than $1 a day and 30% of the people going hungry. He says the people there are looking forward to the African Continental Free Trade Area that was launched in Niger last Sunday as a way out of their poverty. He says the challenges faced by the region require industries that still are not very competitive, either be developed or be knocked out of the market by stiffer competition.
We're going to have a big continental market in Africa. So it's very, very important for us to protect ourselves. You know, when we have a big continental free trade area, it's going to be a lot of foreign product coming. So we have to protect our industries, we have to protect our people, we have to protect our market because it's attractive for the whole world.
Asil said, despite the African free trade area launch, much work needs to be done before the agreement, signed by all 55 members of the African Union, except Eritrea, becomes effective. Trade between African countries has been held back by several bottlenecks, such as poor infrastructure, cumbersome border procedures, trade regulations, tariffs, and the high cost of transactions. The UN Economic Commission for Africa, however, estimates an increase in intra-African trade of 52.3% by 2020, asserting it will increase employment, facilitate better use of local resources for manufacturing and agriculture, and provide access to less expensive products. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Kiosi, Cameroon.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas in Puga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Let's begin with the Africa Cup of Nations in Egypt. The tournament enters the semi-final stage Sunday with Senegal taking on Tunisia and later Algeria facing Nigeria. The three most successful teams in Africa Cup of Nations history, that's Egypt, Cameroon and Ghana, were knocked out in the last 16, leaving Nigeria at the side with the best record. The most recent of their three triumphs came in 2013. Senegal, who have reached the World Cup quarterfinals, have never won the Africa Cup of Nations. Their best run was the 2002 final, which they lost on penalties to Cameroon. Tunisia in 2004 and Algeria in 1990 have won the tournament once. The final takes place on Friday at the Cairo International Stadium, with the third place playoff 2 days earlier. In tennis, on Saturday, Simona Halep beat Serena Williams 6-2, 6-2 to win her first Wimbledon title. The Romanian won 56 minutes to seal her second Grand Slam title. Williams had been the pre-match favorite to win a record-equaling 24th Grand Slam title, but could not find an answer to Halep's brilliant returning game and movement around the court. And at the Netball World Cup that kicked off in Liverpool on Friday, Malawi lost to New Zealand, Zimbabwe beat Sri Lanka, South Africa beat Trinidad and Tobago, while Uganda lost to UK. On Saturday, Zimbabwe lost to Australia, Malawi beat Singapore, while Uganda beat Samoa, and South Africa defeated Fiji. Sunday, Malawi beat Barbados, Uganda beat Scotland, while England ended the first preliminary stage of the Netball World Cup as Group D winners with a 90-24 win over Samoa. England have 3 wins from 3 games and progress from Group D along with Uganda and Scotland. The second stage of the tournament features 2 groups and only the top 2 teams from each qualify for the semi-finals. In athletics at the IAAF Diamond League in Monaco, Sifan Hassan, a distant runner from the Netherlands, broke the women's mile record on Friday with a time of 4 minutes 12.33 seconds. The record was previously set by Russia's Svetlana Mastakova in Zurich in 1996, who clocked a time of 4 minutes 12.56. Botswana's Niger Lamos ran the fastest men's 800 meters since the 2012 Olympics with a time of 1 minute 41.89 seconds. Kenya's David Rudisha had set the current world record of 1.40.91. Kenya's Timothy Cheruiyot won the men's 1500 meters. Cheruiyot won in 3:29.97, with Norway's 18-year-old Jakob Ingebrigtsen coming second in 3:30.47, and Uganda's Roland Masagala third in a national record of 3:30.58. And that's about it for this edition of Netherlands Africa Sports. Now back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African Sport Nightline, Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent. You're hearing from Willie Paul featuring Alain with Shadow Madu. Stone Boy featuring Beanie Man comes your way with Sugar. B2C featuring Rema Gutuja follows. And then Dali Sykes featuring Harmonize top it up with Nikomishi.
Whoa. If I'm out with a watch, then what's a bam bam? Oh, For the banana, we dey rise up the man them banana. Buy one get one free for the banana. Oh I, hey Vinny man, we are the girl them sugar. Same time and the girl them banana. We are the girl them sugar. Same time and the girl them banana. We are the girl them sugar. Same time and the girl them banana. The girl them sugar. Same time and the girl them banana. Ah oh, hey always. Me score like Kabbalah. She feel like a virgin Madonna. Juice pussy in your belly, you know their mama. Beanie man, me have the girls and banana. Me, now go a no manaba. Say you a gabby, say you a fi go a clubada. Y'all run the farm and come a jamada. Y'all travel from Africa to Canada. So me draw fi me share like Kabbalah.
Hey, Beanie man, we are the girl them sugar.
Yeah.
wale tabu mutima munda piebe Wakala omu wika Wansangula maziga kundo
Kutuja, kutuja, kutuja
our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. I have been reflecting on the existential difficulties being confronted by Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed of Ethiopia in the context of the ever-strong demand that Africa should produce more good leaders and less corrupt ones. Here we have a man in Ethiopia who was only appointed prime minister 2 years ago, yet he has already made a mark suggesting that he has all that it takes to be a good leader. When Prime Minister Ahmed was appointed, very few knew about him because he had kept a rather low profile. But although he was a military man, he had undertaken studies in social sciences to prepare himself for leadership. He had taken studies in leadership itself on how to resolve conflict and how to bring people together. So shortly after he was appointed, he immediately set about applying what he may have thought about for a long time. He tried to apply human rights and humanitarian policies to Ethiopia. He released all prisoners that were in prison and then he told them that they could go about their business peacefully. He next turned his attention to those Ethiopians who were abroad, who were opposition leaders, and appealed to them to return to the country to help build a good and fair Ethiopia. Having achieved these goals, he turned his attention to the foreign policy issues facing Ethiopia. He knew that one of the most difficult issues Ethiopia had faced was that of Badme, a dispute between Eritrea and Ethiopia. He moved quickly to accept the ruling of an international panel that Badme should go to Eritrea, and then worked on further rapprochement with Eritrea. He turned his attention to the Renaissance Dam, which Ethiopia was constructing, flowing to the Nile, and had caused some difficulties between Ethiopia, the Sudan, and Egypt, and tried to reduce tension. That too was achieved. Then he turned his attention to domestic policies. And he may have learned lessons from Rwanda because his gender policy brought about almost equity or parity with the gender in Ethiopia. Men Ethiopian women were given important jobs and responsible jobs because they were competent. And these steps showed how much he was trying to build a new Ethiopia. Having achieved all of these, he began to see how Ethiopia could use his good offices to resolve regional disputes. And he was dealing with Southern Sudan. And in fact, it was when he was trying to help resolve the issue in the Sudan between the military and the civilians that they thought difficulties arose in Ethiopia. What the attempted coup showed, and by the way, this is not the first attempted coup. Shortly after I was appointed, there was an appointed coup. It's a lesson to those who talk about leadership. No matter how proper and good a leader is, there will be opposition. And there are people in Ethiopia today who prefer the old ways of doing things and may not like what Prime Minister Ahmed is doing. And this may account for all of these difficulties. What then is the lesson we know? First of all, it is important that the domestic support of the Prime Minister be strengthened. Ethiopians should not take for granted the leadership quality of the Prime Minister. Secondly, since Addis Ababa is the seat of the African Union must find ways and means to grant support to the Prime Minister in these difficult days. And finally, at a time when world leadership around the globe is failing, it is indeed gratifying that Africa has produced a man who could be both a good and wise leader. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. I hope you enjoyed the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Shao Gang Chang, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, you must attend to your business with the vendor in the market, but not to the noise of the market. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton.